There was a very thorough and thoughtful conversation about the threat that North Korea poses.
North Korea is the topic of discussion in a rare White House meeting. It's Thursday, April 27th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online right now at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, China launches a new aircraft carrier, exposing working conditions in Myanmar. Ugandans march against Chinese sellers, a new malaria drug, and space junk. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Lawmakers from both the Senate and House of Representatives received an extraordinary classified briefing by the administration Wednesday. Those attending were able to ask questions of the president's national security team and learn about the broad range of options to remove this threat from North Korea, which a senior administration official also described as, quote, very grave, posed by the brutal and unpredictable Kim Jong-un regime. A short time ago, all 100 senators gathered in an auditorium of the executive office building adjacent to the White House, heightening a sense of urgency to the issue. Chris Coons, a Democrat from Delaware, says no specific actions against North Korea were discussed.
Preemptive strike options were not presented. I do think there was an appropriate and thoughtful focus on how we would react if North Korea took a more aggressive posture, there was a very thorough and thoughtful conversation about the threat that North Korea poses.
White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman joins us with more from the unusual meeting there.
This meeting was also attended briefly by the president. He was there for about 15 minutes, and the senators heard from the Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, the Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford. Now, one of the senators, a member of the Foreign Relations Committee, Chris Coons, after he came out of it, he told reporters here at the White House that it was a sobering briefing, and it was clear just how much thought and planning is going into military options, if that's called for, and also a diplomatic strategy, which he said struck him as clear-eyed and well-proportioned to the threat. And before two of the briefers subsequently headed to Capitol Hill for a similar discussion, which with the 431 current House members, there was a statement issued by Tillerson and Coates warning that the United States remains prepared to defend ourselves and our allies if diplomacy fails to de-escalate North Korea's pursuit of weapons of mass destruction.
Were the senators reassured by the Trump administration's actions so far?
Well, we've only heard directly from one of them so far, but Chris Coons did seem to think that they have things under control and that a lot of thought is going into this. Now, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, earlier said that it was the unpredictability of North Korea that prompted him to ask the president to have his national security team brief the full Senate on North Korea, and that according to McConnell, the president has made clear that having North Korea with a nuclear missile capable of crossing the Pacific is going to be unacceptable.
President Trump has moved a carrier strike group into the region. A nuclear-powered submarine has now arrived in South Korea, and the THAAD missile defense system is being deployed.
Right. Yes, obviously the timeline being escalated for that missile defense system and moving the carrier strike force up there meant to dissuade North Korea from doing anything. There had been concerns that the North Koreans would set off a nuclear, a sixth nuclear test right around now, or perhaps another ballistic missile test launch to mark one of their key anniversary dates. All they did was set off a bunch of artillery, about 300 large caliber self-propelled guns, firing in unison on the shore instead of doing anything more provocative.
White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Jim.
In a repeat of an often heard rhetoric, North Korea's foreign ministry issued a fresh warning that, quote, in case a war breaks out on the peninsula, the U.S. will be held wholly accountable for causing trouble after bringing lots of strategic assets and special warfare means, unquote. North Korea's official news agency, KCNA, characterized current joint drills underway between the United States and South Korean navies as a prelude to an invasion. Donald Trump has said that Chinese President Xi Jinping is applying pressure on North Korea to not engage in further provocations. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. U.S. strike on North Korea could put Seoul in jeopardy. South Korean presidential hopeful accused of anti-gay comments. China issues ban on many Muslim names in Xinjiang. In Kashmir, brutality of videos deepens anger against India. Ex-Pakistan Taliban spokesman claims India and Afghanistan is targeting Pakistan. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. China has launched its first domestically built aircraft carrier, marking an important military milestone. The vessel will become the second carrier in the country's expanding naval fleet. Analysts say the launch highlights the strides China has made in advancing its carrier program, as well as its ambitions to project power further into the Pacific and Indian Oceans. State media say the aircraft carrier has its propulsion, power, and other main systems in place, but will not enter into service until 2020. After the christening ceremony, a state broadcaster announced, quote, the launch of the aircraft carrier is a significant achievement and shows our country's indigenous aircraft carrier design and construction has achieved major step-by-step results. China's first aircraft carrier, the Liaoning, was a rebuilt second-hand Soviet vessel purchased from Ukraine. The new carrier is so strikingly similar to the Liaoning aircraft carrier that many are calling it the Liaoning upgrade. The new carrier is slightly larger, and Chinese military officials say it has significant improvements that will raise its fighting and training capabilities. One key addition that has been highlighted is additional hangar space for fighter jets. Alex Neal, a senior fellow for Asia-Pacific Security at the International Institute for Strategic Studies, called the launch a watershed moment. He says the new carrier's ability to carry more fuel should give it a wider range.
We're likely to see the carrier operating or transiting through the South China Sea, but also moving into the Indian Ocean region as well.
The United States has 10 aircraft carriers already, and earlier this month completed sea trials of its upcoming Gerald R. Ford class supercarrier. It's a 4.5-acre nuclear-powered vessel that weighs 100,000 tons and is capable of cruising for 90 days without resupply. Neal says that while the defense systems on the Chinese ship may be enhanced somewhat, perhaps what is more important is how the carrier will advance China's aircraft carrier strike capability.
An aircraft carrier is a lumbering hunk of metal were it not for the warfighting vessels and logistical vessels which support it. So China has been significantly increasing its output of vessels which will be in a position to defend the aircraft carriers.
Not much is known about China's aircraft carrier program, and while reports say the new carrier's construction began in 2013, it wasn't until 2015 that China confirmed its existence. Military analysts say that China will most likely want to eventually have at least 4 operational aircraft carriers. Our thanks to VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide for bringing us this story. Happening now in Asia, the U.S. military began moving parts of the THAAD anti-missile defense system into South Korea Wednesday. China opposes the system, calling it a threat to its national security. Deployment of the system also has become an issue in the upcoming South Korean presidential election. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very glad that you're listening with us today on VOA Asia. Many multinational corporations outsource their work to low-cost manufacturers in Myanmar, which in some cases has led to unsafe working conditions. The Burmese Women's Union recently released a report and a film chronicling the problem. VOA Asia's Steve Miller spoke with Burmese Women Union spokesperson Daw Tin Tin Nyaw about the group's findings following its four-month investigation.
We started this investigation mainly that we got the idea by meeting with a few of women who are working at the garment factories who attended our workshop and also discussions. And then they have expressed about their problems, and also they would like to have some kind of justice for their problem and to have a good working conditions. And then we also see that this issue are not really highlighted in the mainstream media, and also like are not really bring into the reform process. So that's why we got that idea, and then we started this research with the help of the APWLD, a regional feminist organization, work on based in Thailand. So they have helped us a lot with the technical things.
So what did your investigation uncover about the actual working conditions that the women were facing?
Mainly, we planned to go in depth about the particular problem that faced by women. However, the women main concern that we have identified mostly to do with minimum wage, and then the working condition that all the general workers are facing. I mean, like almost all of the female workers are facing. So that's why we cover a lot on the issue of the minimum wage, which they have identified that the minimum wage law has been adopted without their consent and not really consult with them. And so that is not included in their interest. And they even express that, you know, this minimum wage law has been adopted with an agreement between the employers and the government. So they felt very excluded from this process, and they felt that this is not what they are hoping to get. You know, whenever the government and also the employers...
Have there been any responses from any of the companies named in the report or government agencies since you've released your documents?
Not yet. And we have invited, you know, some of the embassy and also the government department. Those are related to the workers' rights, but for the press conference, they didn't come. Only the media and the many other civil society organizations came. And so I think this will be the first step. So we will have to continue to have more of the advocacy to those directly targeted to the, you know, the company. Those were mentioned in the report, and also the government department, so that they can give some kind of attention on the voices of the workers. But until now, there is no responses yet.
Daw Tin Tin Nyaw is the spokesperson for the Burmese Women's Union. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, too.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia: Hong Kong police arrested two pro-independence candidates elected to and later disqualified from the Legislative Council. The would-be lawmakers and others are being questioned for unlawful assembly after an effort to force their way into a Legislative Council meeting in November. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, this month saw hundreds of Ugandan shop owners march in Kampala against Chinese traders. Local merchants and some city officials want foreigners barred from petty commerce. Halimi Athumani reports from Kampala that the government has promised to address the long-standing tensions.
Inexpensive Chinese goods are common in the markets of downtown Kampala, where locals operate small businesses selling the imported merchandise. But it has also become increasingly common for Chinese in Uganda to set up shops selling the same items, only cheaper. Local shop owner Everest Kayondo, the Kampala Capital City Traders Association chairman, says it's time the government barred foreigners from petty trade.
If you are a manufacturer who has been selling to you, establish a shop in your home country and is doing both retail and wholesale, you will be ruled out of business. Number two, China is also having a policy of giving tax rebates to their nationals. Once they export, the Chinese will be entitled to a tax rebate, which will make their goods 0 to cheaper than their Ugandan counterpart.
Uganda has seen sporadic protests on this issue since 2009. Some Chinese have since been deported for working in the country illegally. But local traders say that is not enough. Last week, they took to Kampala streets blowing whistles and carrying placards with slogans like, "Leave our markets." Government officials were able to talk the traders out of holding a 3-day strike. There is no law in Uganda prohibiting foreigners with work permits from engaging in petty trade. But Ugandan traders complain about foreigners, especially Chinese nationals, who they say come into the country claiming to be large-scale investors but set up small businesses without proper registration. VOA spoke to China's ambassador to Uganda, Chang Chung Kiang.
Chinese businessmen are within the legal boundaries and no one violates the law. But there is a phenomenon. Because someone is not happy, I think we should resolve this issue by law. And another thing is that, as far as I know, if you import tiles from China, there is tax. It's groundless to say that Chinese traders don't pay tax.
Uganda State Minister for Investment and Privatization at the Ministry of Finance, Evelyn Anite, says the ministry is looking into the issue.
It is not anywhere in our policy that we want foreigners to come and trade in the country. We want these foreigners to come and invest in our country as investors. And that's why we are working on our investment policy. And when we license an investor, we don't want them to end downtown. And for us to even give you an investment license, we want to see that you're having a bank guarantee from a reputable bank in your country or from Uganda of not less than $250,000.
According to Ministry of Trade statistics, China is Uganda's second largest source of imports after India and second largest source of foreign direct investment, a total of $9.8 billion since 1993, according to the Uganda Investment Authority. Most of this money has been through loans for construction of major infrastructure projects, such as the hydropower dams and the Entebbe Express Highway. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Developing at this hour in Asia, China launched its first domestically built aircraft carrier Wednesday. The vessel is expected to carry China's J-15 fighter jets, several helicopters, and run on conventional power rather than nuclear. It's the second aircraft carrier for China, part of Beijing's plan to build a blue water navy. China is planning to build more carriers. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, some good news on vaccinations. Scientists have developed a compound that both cured and prevented malaria in animals. VOA's Jessica Berman reports that even though this is an experimental drug, it has even proven effective against resistant strains of the mosquito-borne parasite.
If the experimental drug is effective in humans, it could be a huge breakthrough in the treatment and prevention of malaria, a disease that strikes an estimated 200 million people each year. The parasitic illness is responsible for about 425,000 deaths annually, most of them children in sub-Saharan Africa. Scientists say the compound, called MMV-048, blocks the parasite across its multiple life stages, interrupting the infection cycle and potentially curing the disease in humans. Kelly Chibale is a professor of organic chemistry at the University of Cape Town in South Africa and director of the Cape Town Drug Discovery and Development Center. He's senior author of a study describing the work in the journal Science Translational Medicine. In animal trials, Chibale says MMV-048 cured 100% of mice that were infected with malaria.
Overall, it presents an exciting profile in terms of the potential to contribute to malaria eradication.
Chibale stresses MMV-048 is not a vaccine, but it completely protected monkeys that received a dose of the compound. Researchers were unable to infect them, according to Chibale, who hopes the experimental drug has the same effect in humans.
It's present in the body, in the blood, already, so that even when you get bitten by a mosquito, the parasites initially that end up in the blood, they will find the drug already waiting for them, and they'll be killed off before they increase in population.
In the animal studies, Chibale says the compound lasted for 8 days in the bloodstream, acting as a shield against infection. MMV-048 targets a protein that the malaria parasite needs to protect itself from the immune system. Chibale says the parasites are destroyed in the liver, the first place they travel after someone is bitten by an infected mosquito. That prevents parasites from migrating into the bloodstream, where they normally would infiltrate red cells by the thousands, maturing into a form that can be transmitted back to mosquitoes. Early clinical trials showed that the compound is safe in humans. The next stage of trials, to begin testing MMV-048's effectiveness in people actually infected with malaria, is slated to begin later this year. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Evidence is growing that we are increasingly polluting not only our planet's surface, but the space above it, too. And the consequences could be dire. Scientists met in Darmstadt, Germany, at the 7th European Conference on Space Debris. VOA's George Pudich reports that they say the density of space trash orbiting Earth in some areas is so high that it may soon become dangerous to pass through it.
This animation produced by the European Space Agency ESA is not to scale. In reality, pieces of space trash, from spent rockets and defunct satellites to broken parts and even lost hand tools, are much farther apart from each other. But many of them fly at speeds up to 40,000 kilometers per hour.
Hitting a satellite at that velocity roughly corresponds to an exploding grenade. So the consequences of such a hit mean a satellite failure, for larger objects, even a satellite destruction and fragment generation.
Upon collision, new pieces scatter in different directions. Over the years, their number keeps growing, and the possibility of an impact with a spacecraft carrying astronauts is constantly increasing. At the recent conference in Germany, scientists debated what to do about the problem. ESA's Holger Craig says it needs a global response.
Use of services from space is in everybody's interest. Mitigating the problem, space debris, should be in everybody's interest as well, because we have generated a global problem that can only be solved on a global scale.
The U.S. Space Strategic Command tracks about 18,000 objects, the size of a soccer ball and larger. Scientists calculate that there are about 750,000 centimeter-sized objects and several million not much larger than 1 millimeter. And this is what a 1 centimeter-wide piece of steel moving at 7 kilometers per second can do when it collides with a block of aluminum. The only way to safely remove the space debris would be to collect it, preferably before it shatters to small pieces. Several ideas are being tested, from a spacecraft equipped with a robotic arm to a net fired from a distance. But safely approaching and capturing a tumbling piece of metal moving at enormous speed is a problem that still doesn't have an easy solution. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
Maybe they could get a giant magnet. See George's report on our website at voanews.com. A lot of great video to go with that. We thank you for joining us today on VOA Asia. You can get our program many different ways. We like to suggest iTunes and SoundCloud as some of the ways that you can listen to our program. We'd also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer Jim Harmon, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, wishing you a great day.